Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player.
This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi.
From director Michael Boom Boom Bay.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, Aaron, you sound like a horse.
Yeah, it's a bit of, it's that kind of weekend.
Aaron, have you been partying? I can't tell.
Having a lot of fun. Having a lot of fun up here.
Got it.
But anyway, Out Now is a film podcast. Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, and then jump back into other fun movie topics. This is episode 226.
Those are all even numbers, for sure.
And the main feature for this week, we are talking Michael Bay's 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi.
I can't tell if they're secret or unsecret now that we know who they are.
They're secretive, right?
They're secretive, but they're not secret anymore.
They were secret then.
That's a good point. Yeah, nobody's going to know their story until somebody decided to write a book and a movie about it.
Well, they helped write the book, so, you know, the secret's out. That's the sequel right there.
The secret's out.
The secret's out.
It's going to be like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze.
Exactly, yeah. and yeah, that's what we're doing this week. We have no guests.
Just Aaron and I. It's a classic throwback.
Episode, yeah. What was I thinking of? What were we thinking of? Yeah, well, it's because every now and then we get like sequels to movies. Oh, it's because Kung Fu Panda 3 is coming out. And that was like our 10th episode, I believe, or something like that. Because Thor is our 8th episode. That's how I keep track of things. I remember what our 8th episode is. And Thor is our 8th episode. And then Kung Fu Panda came out like on Memorial Day weekend that year. So that's probably like, it's probably like our 11th episode, I think. And so I was thinking that when I saw a certain movie coming up soon, I was like, oh yeah, that's right, we did Kung Fu Panda like on the first year of the show and like the first batch of episodes. Yeah, now we're on 226, so good for us, I guess.
There you go.
And what else? Let's see. Let's get to some show notes stuff here. A variety of things happened this week.
I know, so, some good, some bad.
Yeah, so let's get to some of the good first. New commentary track is coming soon. I've talked about this plenty of times this month, but we're actually going to record it this coming week. Probably the day that this comes out, actually. It is for The Rock. That is our plan. Arguably Michael Bay's best film. I don't think there's too much debate about that, but that is what we're going to be talking, The Rock. That should be a lot of fun, I think, just because we wanted a new Michael Bay film in general, and that just feels good. And let's see, what else? Our top 10 episode, we had a ton of fun recording our epic top 10 episode, and Abe had a hell of a time editing our epic top 10 episode, so why not take a listen to our top 10 episode? It is.
Thank you to all the listeners for listening to my hard work.
It is, it's a lot of fun, though. We spent a lot of time recording and discussing our top 10 films of the year, so if you haven't checked that out already, please do so.
Yeah, please do so. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now I guess we should probably get to some of the sadder things that happened.
Indeed, yeah. We should talk about some of the things that did happen in this last week.
Yeah, which was... Dope was not nominated for Best Picture of the Year. That was unfortunate.
Yeah, that was pretty sad.
But seriously, yes, we lost a couple people in the span of basically a day, which was a little upsetting. It's like, wow, these... people.
It was quite surprising.
Yeah, for sure. I literally just bought the new album of David Bowie and was like, hey, I'm listening to this. And then this happened at the end of our top 10 podcast. So now I'll always know that because Peter Paris told us this as we finished our recording.
We were exiting. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll always remember this as the day Peter killed David Bowie. And it's pretty sad.
Oh, but, man. It's a lot of weight on your shoulders there, Peter.
But yeah, no, David Bowie died, and that's upsetting. It happens. It's not like we knew him or whatnot, but no, it's an iconic rock legend.
But he's an icon, and he's been around for such a long time in movies and in with his albums, and everybody knows who he is, regardless of whether they listen to his music or have seen The Dark Crystal.
Labyrinth, not The Dark Crystal.
I'm sorry, Labyrinth.
Which, The Labyrinth. There's the movie The Man Who Fell to Earth, which is a really solid sci-fi film. And I really like him as Tesla in The Prestige. That's a movie I really liked that performance. That made me think, man, I wish there was a Tesla spinoff to see him and Edison going at it. I'd like to see that going. That'd
be nice.
But yeah, David Bowie died, and I was like, wow, okay.
Yeah. So he had been battling cancer, and he died after his album release,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, after, and his birthday. So.
And his birthday, yeah.
So now we just get to look forward to Warcraft at the very end, where it says, "For my dead, a true Starman." And
oh man, I forgot Duncan Jones.
Yeah, he put up this really just very sweet picture of like him as a child of David Bowie holding him on his Twitter. I think it was like either his Instagram or his Twitter, but it was like up there.
You can't tell right now, but I got goosebumps when you said that because that makes me sad.
Yeah, but
yeah, it's a nice tribute.
It is. And the other, I mean, we get wrapped up in the David Bowie death, then we got Alan Rickman died too, and it's like, wow.
Yeah, unfortunately, he passed away. Was it a day or a couple of days after David Bowie did?
Yeah.
And he was a great actor. He's a great actor, and from all accounts, a really nice guy too.
Tremendous actor. You know, I mean, his first film was Die Hard. Like, and such an
first American film.
American film, and it's, you know, such an iconic performance. He had plenty of other, like, I don't like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, but he was a pretty nasty sheriff of Nottingham, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Things like Sense and Sensibility, Love Actually comes to mind offhand.
Love Actually.
Just basically films with him and Emma Thompson in them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so.
We were great friends. They were great friends in real life.
Yeah. So. I didn't read the tribute that she wrote yet, but apparently, you know, it was really nice. And also, his voice is unmistakable. So when he was in, what's that one where they're going through space with
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Right, yeah. He's playing that giant robot guy, you know, the sad robot guy. And his voice is perfect for the role.
And, of course, Professor Snape.
Professor Snape, which people remember him from. A lot of people from grew up with these movies. They literally grew up with these movies, you know, so. And then to know that he's not the one that really destroyed everything in the Harry Potter universe, that was just, you know,
things happened the wrong way. And I'm a huge Dogma fan, so I mean, I really like him in Dogma as well as the Metatron. And yeah, just he's obviously done a variety of films or whatnot. And yeah, now he's not around anymore, which is a shame. But
yeah, it is very sad.
Yeah.
So rest in peace to both. And. You know, we certainly don't want to. We never like when these things happen. They do happen, though. But just because, these people are credits to the arts that they do.
Yeah. Let's see. Lighting things up a bit. We got the Oscar nominations this week.
We did.
Yeah. I almost say lighting things up because there's a notable lack of diversity for the second year of a row in the Oscars here. Where
in the Oscars? Wait, what? Are you telling me that Ryan Coogler didn't get nominated for Best Director for Creed?
I know that they nominated the one white guy in Creed, that's for sure. But
they nominated the... I can't think of another white guy. I was like, that movie is like not really full of white guys, except for the old people at Rocky's old gym.
So... Yeah, Wood Harris also did not get a nomination for Creed.
Wood Harris.
But yeah, I mean, pushing that aside for a second, there's a lot of good things in the Oscars here. I mean, it's kind of pretty predictable, I think, for the most
part. Yeah, and it is kind of predictable. I mean, I think the thing that stood out to me, or a couple things stood out to me, one of them is I didn't see Steve Jobs for Best Picture nod, which I guess it doesn't really matter because nobody really saw it, but... You know, the two actors are nominated for Best Lead.
Well, yeah, what's weird is that it has Michael Fassbender in there, which is great. I mean, I like Kate Winslet and Steve Jobs, but the thing that got me about her when I watched it is that like her accent gets like stronger as she gets older, and I was like, well, that doesn't seem right. And it feels like they just filmed it out of order. So it's like,
it kind of feels like the way, because I rewatched it again, and
like in the third act, she's like super Polish, where the first one, yeah, she's like super. Hot, and it's like, I don't think that's how
acting. First one, it goes in and out a little bit.
It's like, all right, but I mean, it's a good performer. I like her in the movie, like it doesn't hurt. I like seeing her. She was like super shocked she won a Golden Globe award the last week too, because it's like, yeah, you should be. I didn't see that coming out. But
I didn't see that coming on either.
But
and it wasn't in a Best Comedy.
Yeah. And, That's Steve. I mean, yeah, Steve Jobs. I mean, if you want to talk about lack of Best Picture nominees, I think There was both Carol and Straight Outta Compton. Honestly, it was a big kind of push for Best Picture that people, a lot of people thought was going to happen.
It led the summer.
Well, it did well, but it also, you know, it got DGA and WGA and PGA nominations. It got a lot of Guild Award nominations, so it's like it seemed like that was going to happen, and it didn't. Which is weird because it's at eight nominees, and it seems like both the lack of diversity and the lack of, like, Carol, which is, you know, critically acclaimed and has all these other nominations, like, if you just put those in as the top two, you'd probably end a lot of the discussion, a little bit at least, about diversity in the Oscar race, but you didn't.
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
But I am happy to see Mad Max getting 10 Academy Award nominations. It's behind The Revenant, basically, in terms of how many awards it's been nominated for. And let's see, the lack of Ridley Scott for a Best Picture nominee. Or Best Director.
Right.
Lack of Best Director nominee, that kind of makes me think George Miller has a better chance at winning that, even if it doesn't happen. At least I think his odds are increased by not having...
I always find it interesting when there's a Best Picture nominee and then the director doesn't get nominated.
Well, it's especially, I mean, now if the, you know, the more than five director nominations, it makes it more obvious, I guess. But yeah, well, back in the day when, you have five nominees in both and, like, director doesn't get nominated for one thing but picture for the other, I can...
Yeah, I mean, didn't happen in... we don't have to get into it. I can't remember who it was. So the other thing that I liked, the supporting actor role, that's a tough category.
Oh, yeah, like, that's
all
that's,
those guys are terrific. Yeah, you got Christian Bale, Tom Hardy, Mark Ruffalo, Mark Rylance, and Sylvester Stallone, and they all had... Tom Hardy a little bit.
Tom Hardy's the one that seems like the odd man out here.
Yeah, it's mostly because he's the only other guy that has more dialogue in The Revenant, probably. But those other guys are terrific in their movies.
I mean, I would have went Steve Carell for Big Short. I think Christian Bale's good, too, but I think Steve Carell probably is the
I didn't even think about that, actually.
The highlight for me as far as because, the actors go.
Right, because I thought that Christian Bale did a good job, too. So
I mean, they're all good. I mean, even Tom Hardy. I mean, he's Tom Hardy. I love Tom Hardy, but I just think The Revenant's one of his weaker roles. Mark Ruffalo is probably the one I want to win most, just because I want Spotlight to get recognition in some game. But although I think
you don't want Sylvester Stallone to win and not mention Michael B. Jordan or Ryan Coogler on stage.
He did mention
he did afterwards.
Well, there's just the television broadcast cut away.
It's not
his fault. Spotlight, at least that Spotlight has the original screenplay award like locked. That's like the one guarantee of the night, I think, right now.
Whatchamacallit. Another thing that kind of surprised me was, we've been talking about it for the show, but the Wiz Khalifa Paul Walker Died song.
Oh, yeah, Paul Walker Died song was nominated.
Nominated.
They have two songs from, like, two documentaries that you've never seen and never heard the songs from before. Those got in there, but somehow the Paul Walker Died song that everyone heard all summer on the radio didn't get nominated.
I mean, I didn't listen to Earned It from the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack, but now I'm curious.
Let's see. Cinematography is in a fantastic category. You got
Roger Deakins.
Hateful Eight, Mad Max, Revenant, Sicario. That's an amazing category.
It's going to be hard.
Yeah.
And I think people are going to look strongly at the, the Revenant for sure, but also Hateful Eight. And
I mean, I'd love to see Deakins win just because he's Deakins and he can
fight. I would love to see Deakins.
But The Revenant, I mean, Lebesgue, he won for Gravity and Birdman. He'd be in that weird slot where he's won three Academy Awards.
Would that be three in a row?
Three in a row.
If he won?
That'd be something crazy.
Man, take that, Tom Hanks.
I like that Black Mass was not nominated for anything. That makes me...
I'm glad. Not even Best Makeup.
Not Best... Which
might have been the category.
Let's see. 50 Shades of Grey can now say it's an Academy Award nominated film. So there you go.
What?
It's got a Best Song.
For the song? Okay, for the song.
Yeah. Visual effects is pretty fun. You have Ex Machina, Mad Max, The Martian, Revenant, and Star Wars. I don't
know. That was also another thing.
I don't know who wins that category.
I also wasn't... I was kind of surprised that Ex Machina didn't get a Best Picture nom. But
I didn't see a Best Picture nom coming, but it got a screenplay nom, which I'm very happy with. And I wish Alicia Vikander got nominated for that instead of the Danish girl. I thought that would have been a...
Best Supporting?
Best Supporting, yeah. Let's see. Anchorman 2's Adam McKay is now an Academy Award nominated director, so that's fun.
Hey, that was a good movie.
I like that Lenny Abramson got in for Room as well. He's directing there. I mean, I think... Mm-hmm. Between that and Spotlight, those probably are the most subtle films as far as directing goes for big main players at the Oscars, and they both made it for Oscars for directing, so good on the Academy for kind of recognizing that, I guess.
I also... I'm glad that Saoirse Ronan got nominated for...
For Brooklyn?
Brooklyn. I don't know if she's going to win, but...
It's a tough category. I think it's probably Brie Larson's to lose right now, but...
I would agree.
But,
Looking at this, and it feels like they just shoehorned Jennifer Lawrence in.
just, I wouldn't say they should. There's a lot of talented people out there this year.
There are,
and yeah. And regardless of how much I like Joy, I think she's very good in the movie. I think that's been the general consensus about the thought of Joy, that Jennifer Lawrence is certainly not bad in the movie. But of course, I'd love to see Charlize Theron get nominated for Mad Max. But you know, whatever. I'll deal.
She had one arm.
Yeah, she cut it off for the movie. Let's see what else is in here that we can talk about. I mean, we can't get back to the lack of diversity. I mean, this is just a lot of white people in these categories.
Just eyeballing this list, yeah, not a whole lot of anything else except for.
No, there's. I mean, the closest we have is Iñárritu for directing. I mean, that's it. Owen, Straight Outta Compton got a screenplay nomination somehow. That was odd to me, but
it's not written by a black guy.
But like I look at that, and it's like, well, the screenplay for Compton, that's like the most generic part of it, where it just follows a lot of cliches. That's what gets the Oscar nomination. Like, all right, that's right. Whatever.
Let's see.
I need to see some of these.
Were you kind of maybe surprised that Inside Out didn't get a Best Picture nomination?
You know, I didn't actually think about that until you just said it right now. I actually am very surprised that Inside Out didn't get a Best Picture nomination. Okay. Yeah, I did not think. But I did not think of that at all until you mentioned it just now.
No, it's been on people's radar, and I'm sure how I feel about that. That's why I'm asking.
Well, it's so overwhelming. I mean, regardless of my thoughts on Inside Out, you know, I really like the movie, but I mean, it is you know, one of the best reviewed movies of the year, which you can't say the same about Bridge of Spies or The Revenant or. Well, I think a lot of these pretty much are, but
right,
those
pretty good.
Those two.
I would agree with you. We haven't done a Revenant review, but I would agree with you. I was like, Best Picture? I don't know.
Yeah, they went Revenant crazy. You got 12 nominations.
You got 12 nominations, yeah. But you brought up a lot of the technical categories. Though. I've got to see a handful more in order to get a better assessment.
Yeah.
But, I haven't seen 4 or 5 years.
I think it's fine. I get where the love for it comes from. I think it's okay. But yeah, I think that's...
Brief.
I think we'll have more talk about the Oscars when they get closer.
Yeah, that's some brief reaction.
We have lots of fun guests that we like to get on when we talk about the Oscars, so we'll get into it. Okay, so with that said, that's the Oscar stuff. And since we're still in our show notes section here, iTunes reviews and ratings, good to get those. Helps out our show. Helps other people find our show. Log on to iTunes, send us a star rating, and even write a review if you'd like to. It pumps us up in the old iTunes charts.
And it also just pumps us up in general. I just wake up and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm pumped.
Yeah. All right, that out of the way, let's get to know everybody. Each week we ask each other a question or two, set the tone for the podcast. We better get to know everybody. All right, I'll start, I guess.
Aaron, I feel like I know you pretty well.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, I still got a question because I wrote one down. So, all right. What historical event should Michael Bay tackle next?
I feel as though he should probably go with something in the... 60s, some civil rights movement thing.
Some civil rights movement?
I really think that he can make a pretty good civil rights movement movie.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't know. That's the first thing that came to mind. Did you have one in mind?
No. You know what? Actually, I would be curious to see him do like a period epic. Like something like...
Interview with the Vampire, but with explosions?
I was going to say something like The Patriot, but...
okay.
It's something that makes sense.
That'll work because he's kind of done.
Well, he's done
he did Pearl Harbor.
He did Pearl Harbor,
which isn't exactly the same thing. But...
That's the furthest back you go, not counting the dinosaurs and Transformers: Age of Extinction, of course.
They came from a different planet, though. I don't know.
But we did see a beginning in depicting the dinosaurs of Earth. So there you go. That's how you have Dinobots. It makes sense.
Robots in
but I would guys. Say yeah something like in the frontier times or like American Revolution times.
Oh, that may actually be interesting too.
I'd be curious to see what he could do with that. How he can add
a little bit more
add explosions into the Revolutionary War.
Yeah,
his Boston Tea Party movie.
For whatever reason the entire boat just explodes.
He could really
shoot one little firecracker. It's like
he can make his political assertions loud and clear by saying Michael Bay's Tea Party. That'd be fun.
Does he lean right?
Does he lead a right?
I don't know. I don't know his political affiliation.
Have you watched 13 Hours? Yeah.
I did watch 13 Hours. I thought there was something interesting about it at the end, though.
We'll get to it. All right. You have a question, dude?
Oh, wait, of course I've seen 13 Hours. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing the podcast.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You have a question?
Is there a Michael Bay muse, do you think?
A muse? Like his person that he uses to draw?
That he just draws from. Because I feel as though, go ahead.
I mean, William Fichtner was in a few of his movies. Friend of the show.
Yeah.
Fichtner, of course.
Yeah. First friend of the show.
First friend of the show. The best friend of the show.
Actually, we should say original.
Original friend of the show.
There you go.
That's a good one. Michael Bay muse. I mean, he's got Wahlberg. He's got him in Pain and Gain and Transformers and the next trend.
So I think that he's the second muse. Because I think that Ben Affleck was his... Ben Affleck might have been his first muse.
Why? Because in one...
Because you have Armageddon.
That's it.
And then you jump into Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
And he's like, oh, I'm going to make another movie with you in it. And then it bombed. And then he's like, maybe I'll go back to Will Smith.
What's the one that bombed?
Pearl Harbor.
Pearl Harbor didn't bomb.
Literally? Or in the box office?
Not at the box office.
Oh, it did not? Okay.
Oh, it's a successful movie, yes.
All right.
It didn't become like Titanic like Disney wanted, but I mean, it still made money. Yeah. Made plenty of money. I think it was like one of the biggest ones of that year. Pearl Harbor.
Indeed. So. Anyhow, I was just curious.
I'll try to think of other Michael. I'm trying to think of multiple. Buscemi was in a few.
He was in a few. He was in Armageddon as well.
And the Island.
The Island?
Yeah, I'm going with Wahlberg for now, though.
That's a good one, yeah. Wahlberg, because of the type of movies he's made with Wahlberg.
Trying to think though, who's been in like a ton of Michael Bay movie? What's his name? The
Joe Pants.
Well, Joe Pants is in both Bad Boys, but no, the other actor he's also in the second Bad Boys in Armageddon. He's Swedish or whatever, but he plays like Russian in Armageddon.
Peter Stormare. Oh, okay.
Or I guess Shia LaBeouf, if you want to look at it that way, with all this
right. I don't know. I don't know if you'd call Shia LaBeouf his muse. Yeah.
He started his three movies.
And then he decided to kick him out for the fourth one.
I guess. There was Peter, you can have Optimus Prime and get Peter Cullen.
The original Optimus Prime voice.
Yeah. He's in five Michael Bay movies at this point, so he's doing something.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, just curious.
This is a fun question to revisit. Michael Bay's muse.
Because, you know, we often talk about... We've been talking about how some directors work really well with some actors, and they continue to want to work with them.
Well, this will go well for our Rock commentary, I think, to have plenty of discussion about Michael Bay then. But yeah, let's see. Okay, moving on.
Okay,
that's how you play. No,
everybody.
All right, moving on. Let's get to our no quickies.
TM.
Oh, there's gonna be the voice. Each week out. Well, we have one movie they talk about during the week. The movies during the week.
Tim.
All right, this week.
Strange voice, but hey, man, you're a trooper.
I'm making it work. Abe, have you seen any other movies this week?
I have.
Sorry,
I got a chance
for the record. I am at my actually. I was trying
to transition to right at the beginning of the show. Maybe Aaron wants to explain to people why he has such a strange voice.
No, that's how we pull him into the podcast. We create a mystery, and 35 minutes later, we answer the question. I am at my friend's bachelor party right now, recording. We are out in. In a secluded location, having some fun here, but yeah, it's been a lot of yelling and playing video games and disc golf and whatnot. So my voice is a bit strained.
You're at a cabin in the woods.
I actually am at a cabin in the woods with a woodshed like outside the area too. So it's almost like Evil Dead completely. But
and then I was just gonna be like, at night, are there people in animal masks just walking around writing things like "you're next" on the windows?
Yeah, that too. Yeah. Well, they're like a huge house. They're not even in a cabin. They got like a huge mansion that they're all stalking in your next. But anyway, Abe, what is the movie you've seen recently?
I got a chance to see The Danish Girl.
Oh, yeah?
And it was all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I was super blown away by it. The topic is an interesting topic, but I will say that the cinematography is really excellent. I mean, I think that it was on purpose that some of these just city shots look like oil paintings.
There are a lot of intense close-ups, Tom Hooper style?
Not as many as you would think, actually.
Okay.
Maybe just a couple times, but those aren't even, like, extreme, and that's more to show the sensation that there's something changing in this person is becoming more aware of their sexuality. There you go. It's an alright movie.
I saw a few things.
A few?
Yeah. I've been watching... we watched Galaxy Quest because of Alan Rickman.
Oh, so, because of Alan Rickman.
Yeah, yeah. Galaxy,
he's great in that movie.
He is great in that movie. Everyone's great in that movie.
He's always saying, like, I'm a real actor. Why am I playing this role here? It's like,
that is the worst Alan Rickman impression.
I know. That you could have ever I'm sorry, played. Mr. Rickman. I'm sorry. I'll work on it, and next week I'll be better.
Mr. McClane.
That was pretty good.
But yeah, we watched Galaxy Quest. Just such a funny movie. As a person that's not a big Star Trek person, it's my favorite Star Trek movie by default. Sam Rockwell kills it in that movie. That's like early Sam Rockwell. I think Tony
Shalhoub. He's dancing in it.
He does a little dance. Tony Shalhoub is probably my favorite thing about that movie, though. I think he's absolutely hilarious. Kind of just getting it just into the alien stuff. Like he doesn't like question it or whatever. He's like, yeah, okay, I'm in.
You already did Moon in Black, so of course.
Exactly, of course, yeah. but I also, let's see, Anna and I, we watched the Kung Fu Panda films to lead up to another movie we might have seen this past week, but the first two Kung Fu Panda movies. And I think we mentioned this, Abe, when we did that show, you know, way back in 2011 for Kung Fu Panda 2. But there's a lot, and both those movies are still really good. They hold up really well.
Yeah, they're really funny.
Kung Fu Panda's gotten better to me over time as well.
And they make a whole lot of sense.
They do.
In terms of cinematic stuff.
They do, and there's like so much like emotional pull in it, and the action's great in those movies. Yeah. But there's a line early on when like Poe's dad, the goose, is telling him about this like.
Wait, what do you mean Poe's dad, the goose? Of course, that's his only dad.
His only dad, yeah. but he talks about how he found him in like a radish basket or whatnot, and he like want to wear pants. And then Jack Black has this line where he's like, "I want to know, like, why was I in a radish basket, and why didn't I like pants like that?" It's so funny to me.
The other thing that I like in Kung Fu Panda 2 is when, I think about this all the time now in movies, is when the bad guy's on a pillar and they're on a boat, like, they're really far away, and the bad guy's shouting, and they're like, what? I can't hear you! Yeah. Because the distance is so great. Yeah. So every time I see that in movies, and I've thought about that before seeing Kung Fu Panda, but when somebody puts it in the movie... I always like when they think about the same things I do.
I think about that when I watch like Gladiator, and like they're having like scenes that are up close and like the audience is just like sitting there in the Coliseum. Like, do they hear what's happening? Like, what's like?
I mean, I thought about that during just watching Point Break a couple weeks ago. I was like, wait a minute, these waves are crashing, and this guy's just shouting, and they're always like 150 feet away. He can't hear him that, or more than 150 feet away. It's like he can't hear him.
It's just like, okay, that I guess it makes some sort of sense. With that, I also watched because the new Coen Brothers film's coming, Hail Caesar, which has a new trailer that's hilarious, by the way. Oh my god, it's so funny.
I feel like that I've already been sold from the first one.
Yeah, but it's the kind of thing where it's not like it doesn't spoil anything in the movie. It's just really it's just really funny, and it's just so great. If you need like 2 minutes of laughter, that's a good way to go. Just watch the new trailer for Hail Caesar. But with that said, I've been watching Coen Brothers films just because I haven't in a while, and why not? And because there's a new Coen Brothers movie coming. So I watched Blood Simple, their first film, and Raising Arizona, their second film, as well
that's
as
a good movie.
Both of those are great for what they're doing. Raising Arizona is just a really fun screwball comedy, and Blood Simple's a really solid thriller. That's like there's a whole sequence involving a person that's trying to cover up somebody's murder that takes like 17 minutes, and there's no dialogue whatsoever, and it's just
how many minutes?
Like, it's like 17 minutes with no dialogue.
Interesting.
It's just a lot of tension, and it's really, really well done. And I love the finale of that movie, so good too. That's if you haven't seen Blood Simple, their very first
movie, I haven't.
It's a great debut film for sure. Like it's very deliberately paced. It's slow paced, but it's like it's such a great like cinematic voice you can watch if you just like watch how the movie is constructed and why it's so tense in certain places. It's really good.
I'd also like to add for Raising Arizona, it also has a sweet message to it because of what Holly Hunter wants. It's fun and screwball and it's baby heisting and all this other jazz, but it's kind of a sweet story.
Oh, I love Nicolas Cage's monologue at the end of that movie. It's such a sweet like ending to it. It is a very sentimental film, I would say. amidst all the kind of
sarcasm
and anarchy going on, and comedic anarchy going on.
Anarchy, for sure, yeah. And it's almost like Baby's Day Out. That's where Baby's Day Out got the idea.
Yeah, and then made a much weaker movie where Joe Mantegna has his balls lit on fire by a baby.
Fat Joe?
Fat
Tony. Or no, I'm sorry, Fat Tony, yeah, thank you.
And I watched Burn After Reading again. I haven't watched Burn After Reading in a while.
Is that the one with
Clooney, Pitt,
Pitt as the fitness guy?
Pitt's great in that movie. Like, he is so funny in that movie. It's the kind of thing. It's like, God, he really wants to be a character actor, and he's certainly doing. He has his chops to do it because he's pulling it off in Burn After.
He's been doing it lately.
For sure. And even The Big Short, he's basically just grizzled character actor.
Right. Yeah. Movie.
But Burn After, it's really like I probably like it really low in the Coen brothers like range, but I still really like it a lot. But mainly just because it's like there's nothing to it beyond like look at all these idiots being idiots. But it's still really funny.
Look at all these idiots being idiots.
That makes up most of the Coen brothers movies in general, by the way.
Yeah,
it's being idiots. All right, but that's enough quickies.
Tim,
let's go on now. Let's get to trailer talk. We discuss one of the newest movie trailers of the week, when it's coming out, and what have you. And this week we got a surprise movie trailer, which I'm always a fan of. A movie that just came out of nowhere that no one knew about until it just happened to be screened with screenings of 13 Hours. It is 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is apparently it is not necessarily a sequel, but it's certainly set in the same universe as of Cloverfield, which is produced by J.J. Abrams, directed by Matt Reeves, who's gone on to do some pretty good things himself with the Apes movies, or the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. This film has John Goodman, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and John Gallagher Jr. as three people that seem to be trapped in some kind of bunker of some kind, and that's all we know. The film is directed by Dan Trachtenberg, who I know, Dan. He used to host...
Personally?
Yes, I do. He used to host a podcast called The Totally Rad Show with Jeff Cannata, who's been on this show before, and Alex...
Jeff has been on the show.
And... that was so like just seeing this. So I'm watching this trailer and I have no idea what it is. And then it says, "Oh, 10 Cloverfield Lane." And I was like, "There's another Cloverfield movie." And then it's in the credits, it's Dan Trachtenberg. It's like, "What? Dan Trachtenberg directed this movie? That's amazing."
The D Train?
The D Train. So it's like, well, that's surprising. And for me personally, I think Cloverfield is something of a modern classic that hasn't got its justice yet. I really like Cloverfield, and I think it's done a lot. I think it's done a lot of things that people don't seem to want to give it credit for. But that's me. Abe, what do you think of all this? That's just
which is a great point for you to throw to me, because I have not seen Cloverfield.
You haven't seen Cloverfield?
No. So when I saw this trailer, I was like, okay, it looks, I mean, I don't know. I know of Cloverfield, and I know what it is and how it started, may or may not have arguable that it started the found footage genre.
It kickstarted it again, I'd say that, because like Blair Witch happened, and like obviously it was popular, but it didn't really like, it was
Blair Witch was like 1999.
Yeah, it was, but it was, so it wasn't, obviously wasn't the movie that really, you know, kind of made more found footage movies happen after the fact. Now, there's other found footage movies, quote unquote found footage movies, before Blair Witch happened, but Blair Witch is, you know, certainly a big hit for what it was doing.
Teddy Ruxpin, the movie, was a found footage movie.
Exactly, yeah.
So when I see this trailer, I'm just thinking to myself, well, this is, because the way that it starts out, I'm just thinking, okay, well, it's clear that they're in a bunker of some kind, and they're all kind of happy-go-lucky, and the music is playing, and then all of a sudden it gets weird, it gets a little bit violent. You know, Mary Elizabeth Winstead hits John Goodman in the face, and, you know, she's trying to run out.
Very grizzled John Goodman, by the way.
Very grizzled. And same thing with John Gallagher.
John Gallagher Jr.,
who's from Short Term 12, and then, you know, it says Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane. That's the title screen. And for me, it kind of was just like, I don't know what I just watched. I'm interested, don't get me wrong. I'm interested, but I'm not really sure how it fits in, or, you know, I'm not as super intrigued about, okay, well, is this at the same time, or is this before or after? So maybe I have to watch Cloverfield to be more excited about this.
I would certainly say watch Clark just because it's a really fun movie. But also, yeah, I'd like to... I can't wait to see what the connection is, for sure. J.J. Abrams, you know, they had to release statements, so there's a sense that it's in the same universe that the movie existed, at least. It could just be, you know, kind of a... like a fun like entry into the universe of Cloverfield that has nothing to do with the movie, or it could be as something that's a directly a result of the first Cloverfield movies.
Could be.
But yeah, so, this movie came out of nowhere, and it comes out in March. Like, it's not even like next year or something like that. It comes out there in 2 months, which is crazy. That I love the idea that I can get surprised by something that like that significant in my eyes.
So those are my 2 cents. I'll have to watch Cloverfield. I guess
that's just a really fun movie. Yeah, you haven't seen Cloverfield.
No, that's why when I saw the trailer, I was like, okay.
Which was handled in a similar way. That trailer just popped up out of nowhere, attached to Transformers in 2007. That came out January 2000.
Oh, I'm glad then. I'm glad that they kind of just were like, let's do it. Let's just release it. Don't tell anybody. I like when they do that.
For sure. Yeah.
It feels old school.
Yeah. But yeah, 10 Cloverfield Lane opens March 11th this year. So, look, I'm looking forward to it. and I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's a movie by, as I said, Dan Trachtenberg, who, if you're not familiar with the Total Rad Show, he did do a film that went viral on YouTube. It was the Portal No Escape, the fan film.
I haven't seen that one either. Maybe I haven't.
It was the fan film that made about the game Portal, that was like right. A real life version of Portal. That was pretty clever. Let's move on to our main movie of the week, 13 Hours, : The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi.
We're going to unleash hate on these guys.
What you do right now will determine whether we live or die.
As long as I'm doing the right thing, God will take care of me.
If you don't send our support, Americans are going to die, including the one talking to you right now.
You're not giving orders anymore. You're in my world now.
I haven't thought about my family once tonight. Thinking about them now. Up here in the middle of all this.
Shoot that son of a bitch!
Thinking about my girls, man.
That should have been some of the trailer for 13 Hours, : The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. This is the newest film from director Michael Bay, who apparently is on an off-and-on schedule of Transformers. Every time he's not doing a movie involving robots, he gets to do something that he wants to do. And,
he's built up his credibility.
For sure. I mean, he did Pain and Gain, and then he did another Transformers movie. Now he's did this, and now he's going to do another Transformers movie. But this film is based on true events. It involves two U.S. compounds, one that was secret, one that wasn't, in Libya, in Benghazi, and a attack that led to both the raiding of one and the attempted raid on another, and a group of six men who are basically a security force made up of SEALs, Rangers, and
Marines.
What's the third? And Marines. Who were basically there to be on call, essentially, if anything happened. Well, things did happen, and they attempted to do what they could to defend what was going on. Let's see, directed by Michael Bay, obviously starring a bunch of random character actors, including Jim from The Office, as well as Roy from The Office, David Denham.
Yeah.
Not to mention James Badge Dale, who I've been quite a fan of over the years, popping up in random things. David
Constable. Is he a friend of the show yet?
James Badge Dale, he can be there.
Yeah. I'm not sure if he's there yet, but I think that he's getting there.
Matt Lesher, who was in Teacher of the Year, who we interviewed the director from. I just wanted to point
that
out.
That's right.
I saw him pop up as he's the American ambassador. It's like, hey, that's Teacher of the Year. a number of people. Films, big Michael Bay explosion action thriller as well, of course, with various other things going on. With all that said, Abe, what'd you think of 13 Hours?
It's a good movie. And there are problems with it, but on the overall, if you were to ask me if you should see it, I would say that it's on a slightly passing mark, whereas some movies I would say it's not. And the reason why I say that it's a good movie is because I'm taking into account the action sequences and sort of the topic and what they're doing with it, and as a package, it's an overall good/decent movie. The things that I didn't like about it were that the characters sort of fall into sort of kind of stereotypes. You know, there's like this group of guys who are security detail, and then there's these goofball guys that might be security detail, and there's this optimistic guy who's super optimistic, who we just talked about, Matt Lesher, and then you have the CIA security compound guy who is the bureaucrat, and then you have the CIA analysts who are apparently a bunch of assholes who don't really want these muscle guys to be in the way of them getting intelligence. And to me, that kind of just feels like it's probably not as authentic as it could be. I'm sure that it's authentic to some degree, but you know, having watched other movies where all these guys seem to work together, you know, they seem to work together for intelligence gathering, right? So it's not as though it's one group is better than the other. It seems as though they're more of a team thing. And when you portray them in such a way that, you know, the CIA people are always upset that the Marines, Rangers, and whatever else are stopping their meetings or stopping them from getting intelligence, and then, you know, just yelling at them for being a bunch of roughnecks and muscly machine gun holding guys, it kind of gets annoying. And same thing with the way that they portray Ambassador Stevens, which, you know, unfortunately he did pass away in this situation. He's also a Berkeley alum. But it's weird when that kind of stuff comes into play, and then you just watch it and you're thinking to yourself, is this something that really would happen? Or am I supposed to feel that these guys really got in the way, or they really disturbed the peace, or they really stopped these secret soldier guys from doing their jobs and basically increased the situation and made it, or exacerbated the situation and made it worse? I'm not really sure how I feel about that. With that being said, aside, when you get to the second act of the movie, or the second half of the movie, it's actually a pretty good action movie. And for the most part, that's why it becomes more of a decent movie, because the setup is just more your typical type of wartime movie setup with the characters and the plot and whatever else. But second part is all a little bit more just all action. I will say that John Krasinski, he gives pretty good emotional performance here. James Hadell is also really good. I forget who plays the CIA agent in charge. I think
David Constable from Breaking Bad and The Wire.
And I'm glad that he got shot in Breaking Bad, because, yeah, I mean, he just is an unlikable character in this movie. That just goes to show what a good actor he is. So with all that being said,
makes him unlikable, though. I mean, there's
they make him extremely unlikable. Which, again, if you've seen something like Zero Dark Thirty, it's like, you know that it's probably not the case. I mean, these guys are CIA agents. They're spies. You know, they've gone through training for this, and they even mentioned in the movie that the guy who's in charge, which is David Constable, who plays their chief, station chief, they say that he's gone through some shit. He's seen some shit. You know what I mean? He's done some shit, I think is what they say. So I don't understand why they have to make it so, like, oh, this guy, he's in the wrong frame of mind. He doesn't really understand what we're doing here as soldiers on the field. It's like, no, man, he's a fucking spy. He's probably been to all these other black sites as well. So that's the only thing I really didn't like about it, is just the type of character setup for particular roles. But other than that, the action's really good. The action is actually really graphic, too. So, anyhow, general thoughts.
I mean, it's the kind of thing with these movies where you have this, or like The Lone Survivor, or American Survivor, or Sniper, or Act of Valor, where there's a clear kind of political influence going on, where it's not necessarily overt to maybe the average viewer or whatnot, but like, there's a way to combat this kind of film. And where, as much as Michael Bay wanted to say this is as apolitical as it gets because I've just stripped it down, it really isn't, because this is you know how you view things. It's inherently political in some way, reflecting on your own vision of it. And that isn't necessarily a bad thing if there's a way to tackle it that's even-handed to some degree, or makes a level of sense in what it's trying to do. And I see what you're saying with it, because there are a lot of character types that kind of denote a certain thought on this, where obviously Michael Bay has the best intentions because he just wants to show why these men are brave, what they did, yeah, and what you know, helped them to do the thing that they needed to do, that they're tasked with, and that some of them might or may not have given their lives to accomplish. And to that degree, it's, you know, it's successful. I think it does it better than Lone Survivor, where I think that film gets too caught up in the kind of martyrdom that the SEALs
are
going with. And even American Sniper, I think it exceeds American Sniper just because the action's so much better. American Sniper just feels very repetitive, and it doesn't delve nearly as much into the kind of interesting part of the story, which is, you know, Chris Kyle's PTSD and what's going on there. It just kind of hits the surface of that. This movie doesn't have to concern itself with that kind of deeper issue. It just focuses on the action portion, with kind of mild pontificating in between events, and that mild pontificating isn't that bad. Like, it's actually,
it's not that bad.
It's pretty well done, because I think James Badgerial and John Krasinski, among others, they're good at what they're doing. The dialogue doesn't need to be that deep, because these guys probably wouldn't have very deep things to say at that time. They'd be addressing things in the way they pretty much do in this film. So with that said, yeah, I mean, you talk about the six guys, they're all basically different shades of the same character type. So there's not much variety there beyond, like, one's funnier, one's more serious, one's more even-handed, one's just bigger than everybody else. Like, that's the way to kind of look at these guys, which is fine, because it does what it needs to do for this kind of movie. I would say it gets to the point, but it doesn't, because the movie's 2.5 hours long. So it,
I forgot to mention that it's a long
it movie. Is a long movie, and I think the first hour is terrific. I think the first hour is really strong in terms of making things intense without having to show you just nothing but action. That said, the action's really good in this movie. I agree. It's a Michael Bay movie. I don't expect not to see good action in a Michael Bay movie, especially one that's grounded in a level of reality. And you get to these portions where it's, you know, a lot of strategizing, and while it may become something of, you know, one zombie wave after another of people being shot at by these guys, I mean, it is
one of the best Plants vs. Zombies movies ever.
/ Call of Duty, you can see. it is very visceral and thrilling to see all this take place. And I'm able to set aside this, you know, thoughts on, like, what's going on. Yeah, like David Costable's character as the chief, or just the depiction of various CIA people in general, where they basically all have glasses and just type on their computers. And if you're
and are very rude, and yeah. Again, they don't understand how the field works, but that's almost seemingly impossible.
Yeah, it's a very particular way to look at things, I guess. But regardless of that, what I got was a very competent action movie that didn't bug me as much as some of the other similar ones from recent years. I'd say on a scale from 0 to 0, right, Dark 30, this is a solid 7. So there you go.
Is that a 0 to 12 at 12.3? I mean, what does that mean? But I definitely agree with you that the comparisons to what's coming out recently, yeah, this movie doesn't feel like those. And it doesn't really play up the whole entire melodrama of, oh, well, you know, I just... It sort of does, because there's one point where John Krasinski is talking to his wife, but and talking about how he's done, he wants to go home. But it doesn't really play up the whole entire, like, oh man, I'm out here because you know, I just love being out here with my guys. It's like, yeah, but you know, there's also a point where he's saying, you know, one day my girl's gonna think, why was I even out here in a country I don't even like, with doing something that I don't even understand? And it's like, yeah, I mean, why would they? And they don't really hit you up in the head with it, because again, I think it's geared more toward an action movie. And then when I think of something like this versus a Black Hawk Down, which they actually talk about in the movie, they bring it up, they name it. Black Hawk Down is also a different type of movie, and that's one in which it's really just about the situation itself. Like,
Black Hawk Down's a better example of, like,
it's a great example.
It really does have to be if you want to say apolitical, Black Hawk Down pretty much is.
It's apolitical, because they don't talk about anything else other than the guys on the field, right? So the guys on the field, and they really just keep it on the. Ridley Scott does a really good job of just keeping it with those guys. He doesn't really pan around, and you don't really see, like, oh, okay, well, you know, this is what the guys over in the far base are thinking.
The only thing you see is frustrated Sam Shepard watching the monitors and not knowing what the hell to do.
Yeah, and then you also get a lot of frustration from all the guys on the ground, which is like, hey, you know, I don't know how to deal with this and whatever else. And there's never a battle, and this is something that I sort of was kind of curious about in this movie, is because they're saying these guys are Marines, three Marines, an Army Ranger, a Navy SEAL, and I forget what John Krasinski is. So, something like that, right? So, when they get help from the guys from a different group, when they come through, they're like, oh, and these are the Delta guys. It's like, the Delta is also an elite soldier. Why would you badmouth the Delta guys? I don't understand. And, again, it's just more of, why, you guys seem to be all on the same team. You guys have all seen a lot of battles and a lot of war, so I don't get what the difference is between one group and another. I know what the difference is, you know, strategically, but I didn't really understand. It's like, okay, well, the Navy SEAL guys, I mean, we know how to fight, but those Delta guys, they only know how to take care of destroying information. It's like, I don't know. I mean, this is all one universe right now. So, I didn't really see the need to do that in the movie.
Something I did enjoy, and I can't say it's completely backed away from, you know, doing the kind of depicting the quote unquote bad guys in a certain light, where like you have a Muslim population, you have a scene where they're all praying, and it almost kind of worked until they started the praying, and then you have like a shot of like guns in the foreground,
AK-47,
it's brief enough. And then there's scenes where that doesn't happen, where they just have praying without having that to be shown. But I mean, regardless of these moments, I did like the there's a lot of kind of battlefield confusion as to who's friendly and who's not that keeps coming up. It's kind of a recurring theme during the action. And I found that to be interesting. I found that to be a neat wit. It's like, as you're seeing these guys walking amongst the various citizens of Libya, and they made the first compound, and everyone's just kind of all over the place, and they have no idea what's going on. It's like, are you just coming out of the bushes for some reason? What's wrong? There's a lot of that kind of stuff that I was,
and I think that speaks to modern day warfare, and how combatants aren't really traditional combatants anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to wear uniforms, and that's why the levels of I think you mentioned earlier the levels of tension and just setting up the way that things are going to go down, it becomes very intense because I don't know who's who either. You know. That was pretty interesting about that. The other thing that I find a little bit more interesting is the way that Michael Bay doesn't necessarily focus on a bad guy per se. I can't really tell if it's the same guy that Michael Bay, you know, pans into a couple times in the movie. I can't remember.
Yeah, there's a specific person that
is there. He's not named, or you know, it's not as though he's yelling orders. It's just more of this. Person seems to be a person of a higher rank of some sort on the opposing side, and I'm glad that they didn't do anything with that, I guess.
Yeah, it's not as egregious as like when American Sniper has a, you know, his dark side version of him going after him,
right? And that feels, to some degree, it feels a little bit cheap, right? So whereas this one, it's like, okay, well, cool, everybody seems to be nameless, and well, the reason why I brought up the, I don't really know Michael Bay's political things, because at the end of the movie, you know, they show that the women and the children come out, and it's basically just a sad day for everybody. So that's why I'm not really sure if it was something that, you know, Michael Bay, is he far right leaning, or is he middle, or is he far left leaning? I'm not really sure. I can definitely tell. I can definitely get a sense, but, you know, the movie is a little bit, why would you show that then? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there's which I commend. I do agree. Some of the later scenes, the way it shows, you know, there's the results that come of things that happen. I thought that it was something, you know, I haven't seen often in these kinds of movies, so it worked out well enough in a way. So we're to something like The Kingdom, which I like quite a bit.
You keep on telling me to watch The Kingdom.
Kingdom's solid.
Wait, 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 wait. The Kingdom of Heaven or The Kingdom?
No, The Kingdom. I mean, watch both of those because they're both great.
Peter Berg's?
Yes, but Peter Berg's The Kingdom.
Okay,
so that's a solid one. Better than his Lone Survivor. I mean, yeah, no, there's good stuff there. I mean, I would say that stuff doesn't confuse me as to where I think Bay stands in some of these things, but just based on just how he depicts CIA people versus everybody, or his, you know, the six guys he's celebrating versus everybody else in the world.
Right.
No, just overall, I mean, the movie, for the action is what, you know, counts here most of all, I think, is what's on Bay's mind. And, you know, the kind of thematic depth he goes for is somewhat minimal, but not intrusive in a way that affected me, which I think worked out for a film like this, honestly.
Yeah, and I agree with you, because there are moments where it could be a little bit more played up, you know, when you know, there are soldiers that die in this movie, and that stuff isn't really, like, held on for too long, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not American Sniper, it's not a, what's a Peter Berg movie that we just
talked about? Lone Survivor?
Yeah, it's not a Lone Survivor type situation where these guys get a lot of screen time for a tragic event in their life, you know.
Well, I mean, there's a key shot that's in slow motion that really kind of emphasizes the one thing, and then there are a lot of
Yeah, but even that, the aftermath of that shot is
yeah, no,
it's quickly over.
It is, no, I go just for sure compared to Lone Survivor. Yes,
yeah,
like
yeah, where it's like, you know, I understand that situation, and trust me, those guys deserve the medals and the honors that they get.
Yeah, it's never a matter of these guys didn't do enough.
Yeah, like, Aaron and I,
plenty of ways to celebrate.
Yeah, we're not anti anything. It's just more of, you know, when you see it on movies, sometimes directors try and play up a certain aspect of things to get the hearts and minds of people. And to me, that feels like, why would you do this? You know, we already know the situation. It's already a sad situation, so you don't need to do that. So, you know, when John Krasinski is just yelling at this guy, you know, that's effective.
It is. Oh, yeah, Krasinski's great in this movie. I agree.
Yeah, Krasinski is pretty good with more of the emotional beats. And I agree with you that Roy is also really good. So Jim and Roy working together again.
Hash things up.
Yeah, Roy's become a lot more calmer.
Yep.
So, but with that being said, I agree with you that the action is the centerpiece of this. The action is shot very interestingly, because I think the best thing about it is that you're given spatially where things are, from a visual standpoint and also from a movie storytelling standpoint. They tell you that there's A tower, B tower, C tower, and D tower. They tell you that the compound is this way, the slaughterhouse is to the left, and to the north is the road. So you know exactly where things are, and they show you it on the film too. So you have a better understanding of what these guys are up against and the strategy that's coming into play. Because I like the way that they're like, okay, well, the first wave is just a test. Second wave is a little bit more strategic. Third wave, they're probably going to start launching some things at us. And they're not wrong, because they've been in battle before.
Yeah, so Bay's sense of geography for the action is very well done here. I mean, I've had some issues with some of the Transformers movies as far as how we kind of, the middle two, I'd say, are the...
You're not talking about when the dinosaurs are there, and you're like, how did the dinosaurs get onto the island?
No, I figured that out. They made that work.
They swam? I think they swam.
They made it work. Okay. the second, like, Revenge of the Fallen and Age of Extinction were always movies that were like, I mean, as much as I like Bay's action in any movie, really, I mean, those two were ones that I feel like suffered from him not really clearly establishing where things were. Whereas movies like The Rock, or even the Bad Boys films, or this film, or just a number of his movies, he has a great sense of how to show you placement of people. I wouldn't say it's flawless in the same way as some other action movies we've seen over recent times, but I think the mix of how he shoots it and how he kind of puts it on display to make us understand why it matters, I think, is fairly well done. And I think we've talked about this before, but like action scenes, along with being technically proficient and fun to watch, there's something about, you know, having a kind of story to tell in each individual action sequence that is always, if it has a beginning and an end, it's always way better than just having like just action sequences. Where I think The Raid is an amazing example of that. The Raid, it feels like you can see a beginning of an action scene and the end of that scene. There's an arc of it. Where something like the third Transformers movie, remember when Optimus Prime just gets tangled in webs for like randomly for like an hour, and then there's like,
yeah, doesn't he like cut himself out with like the hot laser blades eventually, or something?
But like something about that movie particularly is like, you could kind of that jumble of action during the hour of that end, you could kind of randomly shuffle those scenes and it wouldn't make any difference. Whereas a movie like this, for example, which is much better done, there's a clear beginning and end to each sequence, because there's, you know, things that happen regarding where the soldiers are and whatnot, like the zombie land, which is like the north area of their compound or whatever.
Yeah,
like there's a beginning and end to that sequence. You can't shuffle that around to a different part because it wouldn't make any sense. And so right. Like it is well handled in that perspective, which is, you know, good. Like that's how you construct a good action movie in that way.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point that you bring up with the beginning and end of action sequences, because they do a great job of it, or he does a great job of that in this movie. You know, every battle has an ending. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like, oh, they're fighting from the beginning and then finally at the end they're done. No, that it does feel a little bit more satisfying, but also it increases the tension in a much more natural rate, if that makes any sense. Because then you're just thinking to yourself, okay, well, now everyone is preparing for the next wave, or everyone's preparing for what's going to happen next, and it adds a lot more to the movie. So, you know, kudos to them. So, again, as an action movie, it's pretty good. As an overall movie, it's all right. It's decent.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I am as well.
Cool.
With that said, when would you say people should go see this movie?
I kind of think that it's kind of a Blu-ray movie.
I think it's fit for a big screen. I'd say maybe a matinee, but it's certainly the kind of the entertainment value you get out of the action on this scale, I think, is very good. So for that reason, I would say see it on a big screen.
All right. That's our thoughts on 13 Hours. Let's move on now. Let's get to our sponsor real quick. This week's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Why Audible? Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks and other similar programs for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any kind of MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook download of your choice with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Choose a book to download for free and just start listening. It's that easy. audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. You can get a book for free. Check out the service. If you don't like the service, you can get rid of it, but you get to keep that book they download for free. So be a winner.
Read.
Or listen at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. All right, now let's get some feedback.
Feedback! All right.
Where we go over the various questions and answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where we asked a lot of questions, and you guys gave some answers here. So, yeah, let's get into it. First question we had is best and worst Michael Bay films. And Mike Jones writes, best, none. I will give him props for Megan Fox and Transformers, though. Justin writes, man, I have to see this Pain and Gain. I don't have any disdain for his films. I really anticipated how he was going to do a live-action Transformers. Gerard writes, best, Bad Boys, The Rock, The Island, and Pain and Gain. The rest, the worst, everything else blows. J-Man writes, best, Pain and Gain, and I didn't even like it that much. Worst, everything else. Not a lot of love for some of the ones that I think are
legit. For the ones that are things that he does differently. I mean,
I think are legit good. Like, The Rock is like, where's that? Why is that?
Super appreciate Pain and Gain. I think it's a little long. But
I do too, yeah.
But I like what he's doing in that with... The way that it was surprising to me the way that he directed like The Rock and Mark Wahlberg and even Anthony Mackie in such a way that it's like, no, don't just bro out, but be dumb, but also be sort of clever. So, anyway.
Manish writes, I like The Island and The Rock. Even Pain and Gain had a great performance from Dwayne Johnson. His worst, obviously, the Transformers series. Tyler writes, best, Pain and Gain. Worst, literally everything else. Philip writes, I liked Pearl Harbor when it came out in 2001. Hans Zimmer's score is quite good.
Hans Zimmer does write good scores. Or make, right? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Next question, we asked everybody, any actors who you've enjoyed go from regular person to buff action hero? Philip has, is Abe an actor? Because he's kind of buff and action hero-y. Wink emoticon. He drew the wink emoticon. He didn't write it out. But thank you, Philip. You know, I have been working out. Manish has Theron and Blunt, although I guess they were never really regular. Tyler has Chris Pratt. Justin has Bruce Willis. Was Bruce Willis always buff? And all even back in like his TV show comedy days.
Well, the idea is going from regular person to buff action.
To buff action. Okay, yeah, that's true because people were like, okay, why is this funny guy now all of a sudden in Nakatomi Tower?
Well, I asked it because of John Krasinski, because you know he's Jim in the Office, and now he's a Navy SEAL.
Yeah, so. And he's pretty shredded in the movie. He comes out of the drawer at one frame, and she's like, "Whoa, dude, put those away." And lastly, Mike Jones as Captain Chaos.
Next question we have is, how often do the politics in certain films bother you? Do you enjoy spectacle films with underlying messages in spite of those aspects? Manish writes, I try to appreciate the difference between portrayal of a perspective versus a filmmaker's agreement with it, but for the most part, it takes a really good filmmaker with a keen eye for detail to present different perspectives on how political events. Justin writes, not sure how to answer this and not sound like a jerk, but having served in the Air Force in Desert Storm and my dad in the 82nd during Mogadishu, to me, it seems like a lot of what Hollywood has to say sensationalize things that happen with the military with hints of truth. It doesn't bother me unless it's just an outright lie. Just a good thoughts on that one. I enjoyed that.
We like the serious questions here as well. I mean, you know, thanks for sharing with that, Justin, too. I mean, I know that I didn't know that your dad was also in the military, but I think that you've mentioned a couple times that you were. So, anyhow, the next question that we asked everybody, a favorite or least favorite performance in a Michael Bay film? Tyler has the favorite, The Rock and Pain and Gain. Least favorite, everyone in the Transformers films. Jape Man has favorite, Sean, the winners go home and fuck the prom queen Connery from The Rock. I should have said that was my Scottish accent, which I don't have. And last, or least favorite, this is the obvious answer, but Shia from Transformers 2 or 3. Interesting how I wrote 2 or 3.
Fair.
And lastly, second to last, Justin has Megan Fox when she lifts Bumblebee's hood. But seriously, Sean Connery in The Rock. And lastly, Philip has, I like Alec Baldwin's Jimmy Doolittle in Pearl Harbor.
Let's see. Next, we have favorite action hero Michael Bay film. Tyler writes, even though the movie sucked, the actual attack in Pearl Harbor was pretty good. Justin writes, I would say anytime you see a Transformer change, it looks amazingly real. The first time seeing it on a big screen, my jaw dropped.
And next, we move into questions that you guys asked us. Justin asks, would you rather see really good practical effects or state-of-the-art CG? I think I lean toward practical.
It's not a matter of preferring one or the other. What I like to see is just well-accomplished special effects. That's
true, too.
That doesn't mean one's better than the other. Obviously, there's something tangible about practical effects. I mean, you can look at Star Wars, and there's a ton of practical effects. And this new one, particularly, because that was an idea that he went for to, you know, kind of revisit what made the originals so much fun. But I mean, that movie's also filled with plenty of, you know, CG effects. I don't think anyone's complaining about those either. I mean, it's not a matter of, you know, what looks better. It's just a matter of what looks good on the whole. And if you blend either one, then it works.
And right? I think that also depends on the level, because I asked this on the Hateful Eight podcast, which is, did they put in effects for the air that they're breathing, you know, just see how cold it is? And you guys told me that it was all just real, because he just had a really frosty room. However, with that being said, my point is, even small things like coffee or the steam rising from a cup of coffee or something like that, where I notice it and I'm thinking to myself, is that real or fake? And again, like a lot of The Martian is, Aaron brings a good point, a lot of The Martian is not, I mean, some of those mountains weren't really there, so they're generated after the fact, but it looks good and it plays in with the story well, so...
I mean, yeah, the best is obviously if you don't notice it or it just doesn't alert you to the fact that it's an effect. I mean, that doesn't go for movies with CG characters necessarily, but it's not too much of a problem either if you're not, like, really concerned about it more so than the performance that's happening in front of you. Philip asks, is it really easier to teach drillers how to be astronauts rather than the other way around? No.
No. I mean, they had seven... Okay, so let's go into the plot of Armageddon a little bit. When the guy comes running into mission control at NASA, well, just very briefly,
okay,
they have 18 days because he's like, we have 18 days. And don't ask me how I know. I've seen the movie like 7 or 8 times. They have 18 days, and then they find Harry maybe like 2 or 3 days later. And then they train them for maybe a week?
A week would make, yeah, that sounds right.
And then they have to fly to this asteroid, and they have one shot to do it. So... you tell me if it makes sense to find the badass drillers and train them for a week when they're all being told that they're not physically fit versus just telling astronauts, hey, just take this drill here, drill it, and then just put a bomb in there.
Astronauts don't know the difficulties involved in drilling, clearly.
Except for Steve Buscemi. Oh, astronauts. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Astronauts, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Apparently they don't know enough about engineering to do anything with drilling.
That is a movie.
It's a good question, right, Philip?
Yeah. So yeah, that was that. My feedback.
Feedback.
Let's get to what time is it?
Aaron, I think it might be time for some games here. That was I think that was a sad music that they played at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, Aaron, I've got a game for you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be playing, so it's only for you, buddy. It's all for you.
Oh, and good.
As the woman proceeds to jump off the roof and hang herself, like in The Omen.
Good. Thank you for that.
Yeah. It's called The Yearbook Buddies. This is a game in which I name a movie, and you have to tell me the year, but I'll give you clues by naming other movies of that year. So these are all Michael Bay-directed movies. Okay. So these are all...
This is going to be a really easy game, but okay, cool.
Which is great. All right, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be the winner. I'm not really sure yet because I might be stealing it. I'm not sure. Here we go. No Country for Old Men. Juno.
Transformers.
Do you know the year?
2007.
That is correct. Okay. Shrek. Lord of the Rings and Fellowship of the Ring.
Pearl Harbor, 2001.
That is correct. G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra. The Hangover.
Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, 2009.
Yeah. This would have probably been more fun if somebody was playing with you. Romeo plus Juliet.
The Rock 1996.
Yes. Training Day. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. The Last Samurai. Elf. Finding Nemo.
2003. Is it The Island?
Bad Boys 2.
Bad Boys 2. There it is. Okay.
So Abe gets that one. Brokeback Mountain.
The Island, 2005.
That is correct.
Yeah, okay.
Seven.
Bad Boys, 1995.
Yeah. Elizabeth. The Truman Show.
Armageddon, 98.
98 is correct. And lastly, there is actually no other last because that's all of them. So okay. Congratulations. You almost swept. I got one of them in 2003. That was your book, buddies.
Nice.
You apparently really know a lot of movie years, so I'll have to make this game harder the next time.
I'm good with the years.
Yeah, I'll make this game a lot harder.
All right, let's get down to emphasis. So now, these are movies that are coming out on Blu-ray or streaming, or even DVD this week, and we have quite a few things here. First up, we have Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah, go see it.
Yeah, which has the unrated director's cut now, which is about 20 minutes longer. So I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I would definitely see that one, too.
We also have Everest.
Yeah, go see it. I mean, I think it's an all right movie.
Yeah. Let's see. The Intern with De Niro and Anne Hathaway.
That's already out on DVD?
Well, it came out in September. So it's
I thought it came out like December.
No, it came out in September.
Okay.
It's on Scott's top 10 of the year, so I guess I have to go see this movie at some point.
Sure.
Yeah. Scott, friend of the show, Scott
Mendelson. Friend of the show, Scott Mendelson, yeah. Scotty M.
Yeah. Love 3D from the director of Irreversible Into the Void, so that's probably a laugh riot. Let's see. Woodlawn. This is the one with Rudy. With Sean Astin. It was like a football movie, I believe.
Sean Astin? Isn't that Rudy?
Yeah.
Wait, Sean Astin is in Woodlawn?
Yes, he's in Woodlawn.
Another movie about another movie about a football player?
Yes.
Interesting. All right, okay.
The Diary of a Teenage Girl, which has gotten a lot of critical praise.
I heard that's
good.
Yeah.
I thought it was fine, but I know a lot of people really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Let's see, 12 Monkeys Season 1.
Is the show as good as the movie?
I didn't watch the show, but I've heard good things, I guess. So some people are interested.
Right.
Let's see, Gem and the Holograms, which is awful.
No, don't see it.
And two things coming out on Criterion this week. One is Gilda, old noir. And the other is Inside Llewyn Davis, which is making
that's Criterion now?
Yeah, it is. And it's packed with stuff. I can't wait.
Great soundtrack.
I got my Amazon shipping notice the other day, so I'm like really excited.
If you want to see more Adam Driver, go see that movie.
Yeah.
He sings Rocket. Wait, is it Rocket? I forget the name of the song, but it goes
please,
big.
Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah, and they make a lot of money on it, and Llewyn Davis is like, man.
All right, let's... that was out now. Presents what's out now. This is now we're on Extremely Cool. These are movies that are now streaming on Netflix that we could recommend. You have anything?
Something streaming on Netflix is I think the rest of the Avatar series, The Legend of Korra, actually.
Yeah, that's on there.
Season 3 and 4 are now on there. So I feel like an idiot because I bought them maybe a few months ago, or not a few months ago, like 6-7 months ago, and it's way easier for streaming because I got tired of turning on my DVD player. Going through the menu and choosing the episode. I got really tired of it. So I actually have never finished Legend of Korra. And I really want to. But now that it's on Amazon streaming, it's simple.
Let's see. I watched the first 4 episodes of Making a Murderer so far, and I'm very much enjoying that show.
Okay. I haven't seen it, but there's a lot of buzz around it.
I'm not a true crime guy either, so I'm very... it's interesting to be enjoying a show like this.
You're not Will Wheaton in Stand By Me?
No, I'm not Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton.
So yeah, there's that. And let's see, next week's show, there's a chance we might take a week off.
Maybe, yeah. I have some work stuff, and Aaron has some obligations.
Yeah, so we'll see. If we do a show next week, though, we'll probably talk... I said do. If we... do have a show next week, though. We'll probably talk about The Revenant, since we haven't talked about The Revenant on a full scale yet.
Right. And it's gotten nominated for 12 Academy Awards. 12 Oscars. So, yeah.
And nothing else next week comes out that's of much interest, so there you go.
I mean, there's interesting things coming out, but nothing that we're probably going to be like, oh my gosh, can't believe we missed it.
Yeah.
So yeah, with that said, the last thing we do, what should people go see now? What do you plan to see next? Abe, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
If you haven't seen the Academy Award nominated Spotlight or Brooklyn, you should go see that. I don't really know if they're playing it around anymore. However, if you haven't seen Star Wars, then go see Star Wars. And what I'm going to see next? Not sure. I'm kind of curious about Dirty Grandpa just because Robert De Niro looks like he's having fun in that movie. And then I kind of want to see It Man 3 because I don't know how Mike Tyson time travels back to like 19.
He's not playing Mike Tyson.
Yeah. Oh, he's not. Okay. All right. I was like, I don't know how he travels back to like 1940s China to go fight It Man.
Yeah. Whatever's up for an Oscar is probably worth seeing at this point. There's a lot of good stuff on there. I'd say see The Hateful Eight if you can. And I think I'm seeing next is a screening for Wave. The fifth Wave? No, just Wave. No, there's another movie called Wave that's a Scandinavian like disaster drama. So we'll see where that goes. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I'm not seeing The Fifth Wave. I don't have time for that. That's the reason.
That kind of definitively defines the Chloe Grace Moretz thing. I
don't know if a January supernatural YA, YA novel movies. They're really the defining point for me. But I have no interest in that.
Yeah.
And with that said, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out and Out There and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, dakotazeke.com. You can find all my written movie reviews there. You can also find me on whysoblue.com, of course, for Blu-ray reviews. And you can find me on Twitter at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
You find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com. Tweet at me or Facebook us if you want me to write some stuff, because I get really lazy, like incredibly lazy. You can also find more stuff at twitter.com/walrusmoose, #AaronsPS4.
You could find all the other episodes about Now with Aaron and Abe, which usually have me having a much clearer voice, over at iTunes and Audioboom, as well as at Stitcher.
You can all listen to our old episodes of Podomatic and Age of Stability, as well as we're back up and running at SoundCloud with the current episodes.
You can also you can email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on 13 Hours or anything else that you might have seen recently.
Yeah, we love when we get emails. You can also interact with us over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast, or you can tweet us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And our New Year's resolution to make outnowpodcast.tumblr.com a thing is still ongoing, so let's see where that happens.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out. I mean, you know, we love gifts and stuff, but it's kind of a weird situation. I don't know what I'm talking about.
With all that said, this has been this has been fun. Been a laid back episode, just the two of us talking about things. And with that said, I think that's going to do it for this week's episode. So until next time, so long.
Thank you. Bye. I'm on a mission, and I'm a go ahead on. Yeah, straight into a million. I'm not going home. I ain't going back. I've been there, I've done that. My foot's on the gas. I'm out of my hole. 13 seconds left, and I'm ready to go. I'm a B.A., and I'm in a G.A. Hell yeah, I do it my way, hell yeah, heaven's way. Now I can't stay inside, hell yeah, I gotta take a ride. Yeah, damnation on the dive, hell yeah, heaven's way. 13 seconds left, and I'm ready to go. 13 tons of dynamite, ready to
play some of the trailer for
this is Jack Silva. He trains seals over a Coronado. Welcome to Club Med. State's under attack. We gotta go now. You are not the first line of defense. You will stand down. And then I forget what happens next.
Other things.
Probably a bunch of gunfire.
Lots of explosions.
Something. A lot of explosions, gunfire. It's like, we are the only... No, I'm sorry. I messed up James Badgedale's line. Listen, look, you don't have to go. But we are their only hope.
If we do a show next week, though, we'll probably talk. I said do. If we.